Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Kirsten Major, Commissioning Editor here at The Independent, and this is Double Take, a podcast in which our writers come into the studio to read and discuss one of their opinion pieces. It could be their weekly column or something from the archives that shines some light on this week's news. Today, we're joined by journalist, author and broadcaster Grace Dent, who will be reading and discussing her piece, James Corden, Women Can Joke About Sexual Assault But You Can't, and This Is Why.
James Corden appears shocked by the global anger over his jokes about his friend Harvey at an awards ceremony this weekend. I'm not shocked, but neither am I someone who thinks sexual assault and male abuse can never be joked about. My darkest fear and largest ongoing bugbear with 21st century society is mine to utter deadpan one-liners on. I woke at 5:30 this morning and I couldn't go out running then as it was dark and I might have gotten raped. But if I left it until 7:30, then all the men in vans would be off to work and I would have been steadily abused about every 300 metres. And this has gone on since I was 11. And tiny daily quandaries like this, plus 2 decades in the media, make a woman very realistic about what many men behave like. So when I work with men like Weinstein, and I've never met him, thank God, and that man comes in late to the office of a morning, I'm the sort of woman who'll reply to the question, where is X? With, oh, God knows, he's probably standing sheepishly in his garden burning last night's clothes. And that, my friends, is a rape joke, but it's not really a joke, you know, boom, boom, ha, ha. It's more a signifier that this man's behaviour is creeping me out. However, it's not illegal to target all the interns for sex or talk only to a woman's tits or prearrange models to party with after conferences. Plus, if one did raise any concerns about this type of man, then 12 people in that company whose denial works in tandem with their mortgage repayments would laugh awkwardly and they'd mumble, oh, that's just what he's like. He's a bit of a nightmare. But he's harmless, really. He has his demons. But Corden, on the other hand, cannot expect to loll it up with ease about Harvey, who he's on first name terms with, being accused of using his power again and again and again to schedule hotel room auditions. I'm not saying James Corden does not have the right to joke. No, James Corden has the right to open his mouth and say anything he wants. But if Corden expects these jokes to land smoothly at this moment in time, he needs to know that by about Thursday last week, perhaps like many women, I had a retinal migraine from silently but angrily enduring the question, but how do powerful men get away with this? In fact, by the weekend, I was considering answering it personally by hiring a billboard on the Hanger Lane gyratory and beginning a complex spider diagram of the thousands of differing and interlinking types of pushback and derision and disbelief and mudslinging career jeopardy that a difficult woman will face for just saying, it's not okay, this isn't fair. My biggest concerns were that the 30 metre by 120 metre billboard might not be large enough to house sex pest in the workplace subsections such as, she's just a talentless slag with a grudge, or, but he has 2 lovely children, why spoil their lives? Or, but his company spend millions of pounds at my firm and that pays dozens of salaries, or, well, I have no witnesses, and when I say it out loud, the story just sounds like I was complicit. Or, this is my fault. I did go in that room with him, and maybe my expression suggested that I wanted him to wank. Or even, the last woman who said something disappeared out of the business, and his wife stood by him, and now the complainant is working in a different field altogether and is very bitter. The billboard would not solve anything. but it could be empowering to look at. Plus, at least when another dickwad taxi driver turns to you after a radio news bulletin and says, oh, these women, they're all saying he's done stuff now, aren't they? Why now, eh? At least one could shout, driver, I need us to reroute past the Hanger Lane gyratory where Grace Dent is up a stepladder and she is really very, very angry. If Corden cannot understand why his jokes about, for example, Weinstein allegedly masturbating into a plant pot aren't making people laugh coming from his mouth, then it's because he misunderstands the level of anger. But James Corden is listening to these unfolding events on a different frequency. I wish that for just 5 minutes, I could play him the New York police tapes of Weinstein cajoling Ambra Batiana Guitares into a hotel room at the frequency which I can hear it. The frequency I hear things after decades of dealing with men like this. That fake desperation to make things better and his constant reminders that it's she who's creating an embarrassing scene and that this is a fine hotel where he stays regularly and people know him. And his reminders that he is famous or that the touching that she's clearly upset about is normal. I mean, it's minimal. And that he is absolutely entitled to another chance to be alone with her and to prove himself and that she just needs to shut up now and stop making a fuss. Most men will never hear that tape at the frequency a woman can hear it with its sub-meanings and its inferences and its dark manipulations laid bare. And if you don't quite understand why we're so angry, excuse us if we don't quite think it's territory for your comedy either.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Thanks for joining us, Grace.
Thanks for having me. I think that was full Grace Dent, 100% undiluted.
I love that.
They don't let me talk like that on Radio 4 because the moment that I start to talk in that accent, like brigadiers and majors in Berkshire start to immediately bombard the switchboard.
Saying that I can't
understand that horrible northern woman. What's happening? That was very unfettered me.
No,
that was kind of Friday night me, actually.
But I feel like when we commissioned that piece, it struck a nerve with you.
Yes.
And you just bashed out in like an hour, didn't you?
Yes, I did. It was one of those pieces. I write every Monday. It used to be Monday for Tuesday, but everything's kind of changed now. It's kind of Monday for Monday afternoon now, isn't it?
And
it
goes Tuesday, Monday for Tuesday for the app.
Yeah, see, this is it. When you start to try to tell me this again, I just kind of go slightly blind in one eye. I can't. I will never understand this new stuff. But so we agree topics early on Monday, and often I get the idea and I kind of faff around for a bit and make coffees and watch a little bit of This Morning and talk to my mum. It's because I'm kind of cogitating over what it is because, sometimes I don't know enough about the thing. This is the columnist's plight. You think you know, but you don't know what you think. You don't know what you think about the thing that you know.
Yeah.
So you end up with kind of squiggles on the back of envelopes and kind of salient points and where you think that the intro might start and where you think that the conclusion might end. But then you get things like Weinstein and it's just literally like, it's just, I think I said to you, it's like coughing up a furball. I emailed you and I went, I'll just do it. I'll do Weinstein. It's like coughing up a furball. It's like, there you go. There's 20 years of like how far can I go in this 700 and 800 words before the lawyers step in? And I was thinking, okay, I don't want the lawyers to slow down the process. I often work with that in my head as well, thinking I want it to go up as quickly as it can, and I don't want it to get slashed by people who are cautious. And of course they're cautious because they will get sued. So I had to keep names and places out of places I'd worked out of it, and keep it all quite loose, but also try to keep the meaning of my anger. And you know, my thing that I was really stuck out quickly in my head when I started to write, and it did take me about an hour and a half to write, was that the things that I was angry about, they're not illegal. It's not illegal to keep having sex with the interns in your office.
And that's why often it feels really hard to call out sexism, because you're like, yes, I know there's something wrong in this situation, but I know that if I, and it's a sense, and you know it, right? Yes. As soon as a man turns on, you're like, oh, this is happening, right? But like, how do I articulate this without sounding hysterical, quote unquote? How do I articulate this without, it's not like you said in your piece, without someone being like, well, actually, you kind of brought it on for yourself. You went out into the smoking area with that person, didn't you? So yeah, of course they'd say that thing to you.
Yes. Yes. I mean, look, I think that the reason this became such a big issue so quickly with Weinstein was because it threw up for lots and lots and lots of women situations they've been in, situations where, you know, they've been to a conference and suddenly kind of found themselves in a room with somebody who's done something, and they haven't been able to complain because, you know, the things I said in the piece, oh, he's got his demons. Oh, this is what he does. Oh, he's a bit like that. Oh, well, surely you knew about that. Well, how many drinks had you had? And, well, you can't say anything. Or do you not realise that he's got four children? What? He did that to you, but he's always on Facebook talking about his children. Hashtag dad time, hashtag family, hashtag Sunday. You know, there's like some of the biggest, can I swear?
Yeah.
Some of the biggest dickheads in this, I'm keeping it quite clean. Some of the biggest dickheads in media spend all weekend taking pictures of the treehouse they built for their children in their house outside London that they've put their little wife to pasture in, because what they generally do is they make a bit of money and then they take their wife out of the equation. So she'll be sitting in Kent or wherever. I'm trying to keep this really loose. So she'll be sitting somewhere outside London, and this is throughout media, this is throughout the chefing world, this is throughout advertising. You know, they take their wives out of the equation and then they come back to London and they don't want to split up their marriages because they like the fact that they've got somewhere all their nice pans are and their television and their treehouse, and they don't want to have to go through a difficult divorce, and like they don't ultimately want to have to face up to what they've been doing. And then they're in London like a little dog chasing their tails, going round and round and round and round and round, like going, I'm a sex addict, I'm a sex addict. And that's what I'm not saying this is what Weinstein did, but when I look at that, I just go, oh God, there's 100 of him. There's 100 of him. There's like,
it's a varying,
you know,
degrees.
This kind of like, this, you know, it, disrespecting women, taking advantage of them right from the bottom line, you know, from the hiring of interns, from the quashing of their ambitions, from the freezing them out, from pigeonholing them into what they can and they can't do. It's like, we're all kind of simmeringly angry. I think that the thing with Weinstein, that when you started to see women come forward and raise these things that have made them so angry, we all had things that we don't even mention, things that happen every day that we don't even mention.
And the little passive aggressive
things. Tiny little things that happen every day. Like what has made me really angry as well over the last, say, 3 or 4 weeks is, and I kind of, this is like therapy, talking to you now. This is like therapy.
It's
thank
free.
You.
You're
I thank
welcome.
You, honestly, at £80. I think we'll need to do 6 or 7 sessions of this. I'll come back next week. It's when you raise these concerns now, or when I raise things that have happened, just say I was to raise some things that happened yesterday, I do not want a man to say to me, oh my God, did that happen to you? I can't, but oh, I don't want your sympathy, because I'm not, you know, the thing that I said in about going out for a run, And every morning I make that decision. I open my eyes and I think I could really do with doing some exercise. It's dark outside. Where can I really run in the dusk? Because, okay, well, I could leave it a bit later. Oh, and then what am I going to put on? Because I have to go past that traffic jam and that traffic jam, and people, men will wind down their windows and somebody will shout big tits at me and la la la. So what should I wear? Something heavier? Oh, but it's sunny outside. So like what? Like that is like a micro decision that I've made every day of my life, right? And I never talk about it. I never mention it. I never, because you don't want to look like you're whining. And the moment it does come out of my mouth, I don't want a side tilted head going, I can't believe that happened to you yesterday. Like, I'm sorry you had to deal with that. I don't want sympathy. I want you to call out the rest of men and stop this happening to my niece when she grows up.
Because
you know?
It's always up to us, right, to modify our behaviour. Yeah. It's like, maybe I should wear something different. Did I encourage
should
that?
Should I do this?
But
should
if,
I do,
but
you
that's
know?
The thing with the Me Too thing, right? You had hundreds of women say Me Too, you know, this. I think on my Facebook timeline, at any rate, I saw one man saying, I'm really sorry this happens to women. I'm sorry for any part that I've taken in it. I wish men would speak up. Yeah. That was one man.
Yeah.
Like, what are they doing?
I think that right at the moment, men are a little bit knocked on their backs with a sonic boom of shouting and they don't quite know how to handle it. And I think other ones are annoyed. I think they're furious. They're furious that all of their tiny powers and ability to banter has been. And also, you know, there's men that have hidden for so many years behind being feminists. So like
woke
they,
misogynists,
you know, this like,
worst.
You know, like at the moment I've got this thing and I'll tell you who's the king of this at the moment is Russell Brand, the Mr. I've had a daughter. So like everything's changed. I've just been imbued with this new level of understanding about the world. And it's like, mate, 4 years ago, you were, do you know, I'm going to shut up, but you know, we all know what he was like. And now suddenly he's like, oh, I've had a daughter and everything. And I, you know, I'm a spiritual guru and he's the king of them. And London media is full of that. It's full of like, oh no, I'm a feminist. I'm a feminist. And it's like, look, like you guys need to get together and have a chat about things that make me furious every day. Like 20-year-old girls are now thinking that they've got their value through, they get value through, you know, just like doling out like Snapchat nudes of themselves. And like the kitchens of London reverberate with like chefs showing sex videos to each other.
Really?
And like, I'm like, that kind of shit needs to stop. And
why aren't you calling
and
that
like
out?
If your friends are on Tinder, like specifically targeting ugly girls so that you can all have a laugh at her, or like the way that you, if, you know, if the younger members of your staff are getting into serious situations, and you know, it, like if anyone's got somebody pregnant in the office, and some young woman in the office has had having to have an abortion, because like these things should be getting called out by men.
But it's not. It's always up to us.
I'm not talking. You know, I haven't talked much about the film industry because you know I don't. You know, I'm not a Hollywood actress, so I can't really talk about that. But I also know that it's the infrastructure of the way that men have behaved for years that make it very difficult for women to break out of you know, the very small category that we get put in. And I still notice it now. I'm like probably one of the hardest and most vociferous women that you're going to meet in London media. And I'm you know, I always say I'm kind of like a cockroach, like you kind of can't get rid of me, like the men have tried to get rid of me.
Do you feel like that? Just, I was gonna ask this question actually. Like, as you, like, you're clearly at the top of your game in terms of where you're at.
Look how happy I am though.
Look at you. but you know, do you feel like, is it exhausting? Do you feel like you have to fight for it constantly?
Yes, it's never got any easier. I do not bring any glad tidings. Like, I in my 20s I thought that by the time I was in my 30s it would be easier, and then and now, like, in my 40s, like, I very often just go, how can this be so hard, you know, to renegotiate a contract, to go for a job and think that you're going to get it, and then see that you weren't given it, but a white posh man with an ancestor was given it. Really? And you didn't get it, and then suddenly you've kind of been taken off the list because they've got another woman. Or this is, you know, this happens all the time, you know, being judged continuously by my looks and how good that I look on camera, and then the moment that I do get to myself to a level that I where I'm deemed, you know, the camera shone beautifully on that me that day, and my dress was accepted by the public that day, and then immediately I'm a dolly bird with big tits, and no, and people immediately then say, what do you know about food? What do you know about restaurants? What do you like? You know, stick to writing. I get that every day. You know, why don't you just stick to writing about whatever I try to write about? I don't know whether men get that as much.
Oh, no, because whatever they write about, they are the sole source authority for that topic, because people just presume that men, that's where knowledge comes from, right? Yeah. Women must just take their knowledge from men.
I've learned a lot from, there's people like Bjork, and she said once, and I've really always kept an eye on this, she said, this isn't a diss to Kanye West, but when he puts an album together, it's just accepted that he's a genius and an auteur, and he had 25 people who he handpicked to come in and they helped him, but it's his album. And she says, I do that and it's immediately written off. She said, we have still a lot of problem to this day that you're the mensch, you're the person that's doing it. You know, I presented an award the other night, and I was presenting an award, and I was also up for an award at the same ceremony. And I presented the award, and a very, very distinguished figure in media came down to collect it on behalf of the people that couldn't be there. And as I was escorting him off, he said to me, maybe next year you might be up for an award for your thing. And like, this was like the second year that I was nominated for this thing that I was doing. But it's that assumption, these tiny assumptions that, and I was thinking, why did you say that to me? I didn't say anything to him, because we don't say things, we just let it go. I thought, why did you say that to me? Is it because I've had to put a dress on to come in to give the award? I wouldn't be allowed to give the award if I wasn't deemed glamorous enough to give the award. But by making myself glamorous, I've also negated the fact that you could possibly think that the thing that I'm also up for an award, I've shot it out of the park, and I work with 27 producers, and we have made it into this fantastic thing, and it's been nominated for awards. I think that we have a lot of problem in the industry with the idea of a woman polymath, so that if you can do one thing, you can't do another thing. So you'll always get, why don't you just, what, you know? I've lost count of the amount of times that I get called, you know, just like kind of big on Twitter. I get that a lot. Oh,
so it's like, you've done all right for yourself, haven't you? You've done all right. Well done you. But, you know, don't over-egg yourself.
I always talk about, like, one of the great things about Twitter, though, was that, I think that I did feel it was quite difficult to tie up all the ends of all the different things I was good at talking about until Twitter came along. And I could just go, like, here's the contents of my brain. If you want me to talk about Kim Deal and the Pixies playing in 1988 in Preston, I'll talk about that. But then if you want me to talk about communism, I'll talk about that. If you want me to talk about, you know, Michelin star restaurants, I can talk about that. And I felt as if there wasn't really a place for me to even advertise that. And it got to this point, there was this point in my career where I just thought, like, every day I'm told how clever Charlie Brooker is. And I love Charlie, like, and he's been nothing but supportive to my career, and he's a good person. But I do feel like things like social media, you know, did give women the chance to jump forward.
Well, there's that idea of like the Renaissance man. You can be a man who can be good at many, many things. Yes. But women, if you've managed to excel in one part, well, that's well done to you.
Oh, God.
You've got further than you should have.
Yeah, yeah. No, 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 literally. And literally well done. Well done. That's what I mean.
And how do you broach that then? When you're walking into a room and you've got like a group of male execs, say, do you feel like sometimes you have to put game face on? Yeah. Do you go in and you're like, right, Grace? Or is it just something you've adopted in your personality over the years?
I think that one of my greatest assets was that I was born with a naturally quite angry tone of face. And like, I kind of counteract that by, I mean, I think Karen Brady's the same. Like, Karen Brady and me, we can both put on the tractor beam and like look into someone's eyes and be quite soft for a moment, but then you can just go back on to kind of like. But then I quite like the idea of resting bitch face, because resting bitch face has got me a long way. I think that you asked that question, what do you do when you go into a room of men, you know? And I think that the Weinstein thing perhaps as made me think harder about all the stuff I've let away, you know, I've let away over the years. You know, I don't know whether this is a call to arms for me to be angrier and more rude or more abrasive, but I do think about the things I've let go over the years, you know.
Because it's exhausting.
Because you're knackered.
If you fought every battle,
yeah,
you'd be knackered and you wouldn't have the energy for when you, like, sometimes you really want to lay it down.
Yeah.
But then that can be quite frustrating as well, just letting it go.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you do. I think that you do. You know, maybe this Weinstein thing as well was just like 2 weeks of complete anger where everybody decided to not let things go. But I do think that it's reset. Maybe this is imaginary. Maybe this is just in my mind. Maybe I'm knackered. Maybe I've got a bit of a cold coming on and I'm on too many cold and flu pills. But right now, at this moment, it feels like it did reset a few boundaries. Someone sent me something the other day. They went, oh, ha, 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 look what my friend has just put on Twitter. And they sent me some screen grabs. And it was them, this person being like obstreperous and trying to get a reaction. And I just wrote back for the first time. I just went, they sound like a rapist. That's the kind of shit that rapists say. And I just left it. They didn't reply.
Mic drop, bye.
Mic drop.
So Grace, I'm not Dent expecting, has left the building.
I'm not expecting a Christmas card so much off them, but
no, maybe it is time for us to call out more. I don't think it's the cold and flu meds. I genuinely think it's a bit of a watershed moment, especially for creative industries.
Yeah,
and how women are treated within them, you know, in the media and restaurants as well. Restaurants are so macho. I used to date a chef. Oh, the things that they say.
Look. Ugh. Yes, I could look. I mean, this is a whole other podcast. The way that
next episode,
you know, but I've said this because I've, you know, I hang around with chefs and like I've dated people in the hospitality industry, and I have said that, you know, if you want to treat women like this, if you, you know, I've seen waitresses. Like revenge porn on waitresses. I've seen, you know, it's all very murky. But like, you know, I'm trying, you can see I'm frantically trying to censor myself because why am I protecting people? I don't know. Again, this is like therapy. Why am I protecting people? Why am I protecting people? Because I'm tired, as we say, because I'm tired and I know the shitstorm that happens the minute that you actually put it into people's faces and say, but this happened at your restaurant or this happened at your party. You know, it started like this and then this happened. And do you think that's okay? The thing that was really plain on my mind, like a couple of weeks ago, I kept thinking about this guy who was like friends of a friend and who we were coming out of a bar a little while ago, and he was so drunk and he just got me and just slammed me up against the window of a restaurant. And I remember the bang that I hit the window, and he, as he was in, he's just like threw my skirt up, and I and I got it down and I kind of pushed him off and I started shouting, what the fuck is wrong with you? And he was just away with it, right? It was just completely. Anyway, I don't feel, you know, I'm quite a hard thing. I'm okay. I didn't feel like I'd been sexually assaulted. I just felt like I'd been, this is the kind of shit that
just
happens
every day. Just part the kind furniture of your life.
This kind of shit that kind of happens.
That's so
you
fair.
Know?
It's always been there,
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I remember the next morning getting up and feeling quite angry because I just felt quite belittled. I didn't feel sexually violated. I felt belittled and I felt like he wouldn't have done that to a man. And then I stopped and I thought about all the things that were going to happen if I said something. And I played them all through in my head. And I thought, no. And I did say to a couple of people. And one person came back and did I call this the demons thing. Oh, he has his demons, right?
But he's a good man.
He has his demons. And then somebody else said to me, just laughed. Because it's funny. It's kind of funny in a kind of carry on Benny Hill way. Do you know what I mean?
Returns to sort of.
So the second person, the second person laughed. So some people just pretended that they just didn't hear. Selective deafness. And in the end, I tackled him about it. And he didn't say sorry. He was just a bit like, oh, I shouldn't have drank that thing. And anyway, and then that was just something that just went off into the mist, but that was just one thing that happened. And I think that Me Too has probably dragged up so many of these things. You know, you started to see it play out on Twitter where these women are just going on Twitter and going, you can see them, they're like angry. They're sitting at the keyboard looking at these men going, oh, saying some kind of platitude.
And they're like, it's you
and
too.
Going like, you do this. You do know this stuff. Do you know what I mean? You treat women like this, you know, and
then returning to what you said there about the comedy, we'll sort of
go
finish
on.
Up on this. Some of the big things I wanted to ask.
Oh, I'm not
was,
going home. This is me for the day now. You're not going anywhere because
this here. This is happening.
This is us now. No, go on.
The comedy thing, right? People laughing about it. Mm, and this is what I enjoyed most out of your piece and really resonated with me was what is a rape joke and what isn't.
Yeah.
And I think the things with the James Corden, Lindy West talks about this a lot. Mm. I really like her stuff in it. And she says that good comedy punches up, not down. And the thing is, when we joke about sexual assault and abuse and harassment, we're punching down. So when people find it funny that your skirt got lifted up, that it's because you were belittled. That's not funny. That's shit comedy. Good comedy is when you punch up, like your rape joke. That's a good rape joke because you're punching out at the men who are responsible for this sort of behaviour. So do you feel like women can use comedy not to be defensive and not to, you know, try to disarm men? Do you think we should be able to use it to attack them?
Look, yes, of course. I mean, I think that comedy, the fact that it saved my life. Comedy has saved my life. The fact that I find the darkest, bleakest, most gallows humour in everything. In, you know, I have laughed my way through with my friends. We have laughed our way through divorce and abortions and miscarriages and finding your husband in bed with someone else. And I will never let anyone tell me that I can't make a rape joke. I'm not stupid. I know context. I know timing. I can read my room. Don't tell me that I can't laugh about this. You know, when I started to see that coming up as being kind of a school of thought, I said, well, you know, I understand what you're saying, but you're not taking away my darkest fear and telling me that I can't make jokes about that kind of thing. It's all about context. And also with James Corden, make a joke about what you want, but, you know, reap my whirlwind. The problem with James is, and he's not listening to this, because God, he's got better things to do, and he's still not. And if he did start, his mind will have trailed off by right now. I like James, right? And I have met him and interviewed him on a few occasions, and I do know him, and I like him. And I wanted to say this in the piece, and I thought it would soften it. And James, if you're listening to this, I just thought it would soften it. And I didn't want to look as if I was trying to ingratiate myself with you. And I didn't want it to become this thing where I start to, I don't know. I was writing it very quickly, and I ummed and ahed about whether to say that I knew you, and I ummed and ahed about whether to say that you are actually you're a good guy, and I don't think so. Instead, I wrote it to say you just didn't read the room, and you didn't realize, you didn't hear it at the frequency. You don't hear these things at the frequency I do. But you know, I had a load of I had a really horrible thing happen to me once. Really, really horrible. And a lot of people turned their backs. And I will always remember that James Corden did not. And he was lovely. And he kind of reached out and said, are you okay? And so I in my art, I'll always think, you know, he isn't Weinstein.
No, it's
James,
just...
please don't turn out to be Weinstein after this, for God's sake.
Just
don't let me down. But yeah, this wasn't a pop at James Corden. This was a pop at men not being able to hear women's anger about this.
Well, they will if they listen to this.
Pardon?
That hopefully they will if they listen
not
to this.
Not one single man is still listening to this. Not one.
If you're still with us,
the only,
well done, if you made it.
If you are still here, I can only assume that you've been kidnapped by a group of angry feminists, and that you're in some kind of bunker, and they're just showing you like pictures of me and like reading you Elaine Showalter, and just being really, Caitlin Moran's book's probably being shouted. You've been hit about the face by Caitlin Moran's book.
To eat it.
Right now, everybody's just incredibly angry, and I'm sorry that you had to go through this singular man listening.
Well, thank you for joining us, Grace.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you for listening. Please rate, review and subscribe on iTunes, Acast or wherever else you get your podcasts. Helen Hodnoff produced this episode. I'm Kirsty Major. See you next week.